broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and welcome back to our program. And we're here every night until 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And truth is our bitch on this show, so, you know, let the chips fall where they may, baby. As
Buffalo Bill said.
That's very funny.
Old joke, man. I don't care.
Okay, thanks, bud. Also, our website, philhendryshow.com. That's Phil Hendry Show, as Buffalo Bill said. What do you think I'm doing here, huh? Some morning show from 1970?
That was funny.
Anyway, our website is philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass and watch live streaming video of our show right now if you'd like. Listen to thousands of hours of archived radio. We are the only radio show that has archived the individual shows to the extent that we have. So I don't know about anybody else, but we have the largest single radio show archive anywhere in the world, and we're continuing to add to it each and every day. We also are giving away one free month of listening on our website. So we have access to all of the things that people with a backstage pass have access to, our archived video, our archived audio, as well as all of our character clips, as well as all of the other miscellaneous, marvelous things. And our Terry, who is Terry?
Talking about Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby Dooley blog and our Ted Bell blog. I was going to say Terry Bell. Boy, Ted wouldn't like that. Our Ted Bell and Bobby Dooley blogs are there. So here's all you have to do to enter a drawing for one free month of The Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com. You either go to our fan page and like our fan page, and I'll tell you the fan page is facebook.com/PhilHendryFans, PHANS. If you've already liked that fan page, you have another option. You can go over to Twitter and go to Phil Hendry Show. That's twitter.com/PhilHendryShow and hashtag PHS over there at Phil Hendry Show on Twitter. So two options, both of them just magnificent and marvy. And we'll do a drawing at the end of this month for one free month, the month of November, for you. And we'll be giving away a free month ongoing until we get tired and bored of that. And we think of something else really cool to do. Or we somehow fall upon some Spanish doubloons. We raise a wreck that's worth billions, and we just walk away from this gig once and for all. But barring that, we will continue on the best way we know how. Our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Haven't talked to Terry Broomfield in a long time. Terry is a writer and reporter for National News, and we're going to be talking about the phone hacking scandal that was, as you know, that was all the rage this past summer. And of course, it embroiled the businesses of Rupert Murdoch in international imbroglio, as well as all of the scandal that attended his appearance there before the House of Commons. And I guess we're all going to remember Terry, the scene of that guy, whoever it was, giving the throwing the pie in Murdoch's face. Terry, are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm right here, Phil.
Okay, you remember the pie that went into Murdoch's face?
Oh, yeah. Rupert Murdoch is who you're talking about, and it was a circus in the House of Commons this past summer. More the young bride of Rupert Murdoch coming to his defense, attacking the individual who threw that pie, who's a second-tier comic in the nightclub circuit, the cabaret circuit in England. But it was the harbinger of things to come, because Rupert Murdoch and his son James have not escaped public scrutiny and more the public scorn over this phone hacking scandal that has now extended itself into this terribly, terribly traumatic story of the schoolgirl whose phone was hacked, and the family that has that was going to sue Rupert Murdoch, but instead decided not to. He settled $3.2 million, and a very unseemly, I think, end to the saga. As I see it, I don't think that there will ever be an end to this saga, but I think it's a very unseemly.
Now, Rupert Murdoch, in paying this family $3.2 million, a slain schoolgirl whose phone was hacked by his tabloid newspaper, News of the World, you said to me that you felt they were being too harshly criticized. And you even went so far as to write in one of your columns that phone hacking, limited numbers or limited amounts of phone hacking is necessary. Can you explain that?
Well, I think that the amount of phone hacking we're talking about is not significant. It's not in peril to the privacy of people. When you're hacking into the phone of Scarlett Johansson or a major film star or a major international personality, you have to be mindful that they are people whose reputations hang in the balance. One small word to the negative, you can destroy someone's reputation for a long time. The private citizen, a smaller private citizen, a lesser-known private citizen, does not run that quite near the risk. In order for me to do my job, and in order for a lot of reporters to do their jobs these days, we have to be creative. We've got to find different ways to access information. I don't believe that the hacking of a schoolgirl's phone who had committed suicide is the most tasteful or most sensitive thing in the world to do. And if I were a reporter, I would do everything in my power not to have to resort to that. However, the young lady was not known to this day. No one really knows her name. It's been protected as well it should be. The phone belongs now to no one. He hacked into a phone that was the property of a young girl, but she committed suicide, so it was not the property of anyone. And thirdly, unless we're allowed to do a limited amount of phone hacking in exchange for whatever information we're able to gather, we give to the police, we cannot do our jobs anymore because this is the environment we're living in right now.
Are you telling me that you guys ought to be allowed to hack phones?
Now, what I'm telling you is that we need access to information, and we have a increasingly competitive and very much increasingly, Machiavellian and dogmatic approach to the control of the press now. I'm not saying we don't have a free press, but we constantly find ourselves cut out of and shut out of certain areas.
No, but what I'm asking you is this, Tim or Terry, you're saying... that's why I said Terry, by the way, because we had Terry on as a guest.
It's not Terry. It's not Terry Bell. It's not Ted Broomfield either. It's Terry.
Right. Okay, so you're saying that you ought to be allowed to hack phones.
No, I'm not saying that quite. I'm saying that we should be a limited amount of access to the private phone conversations of individuals as long as they're not public personalities, and that is a celebrity or noted figures or well-known figures and so forth.
And why is that? And you know that people might react to that saying, well, that's just perfect. You're going to protect these celebrities. You're going to exploit little-known anonymous people, a little young girl who committed suicide, for God's sake. I can't believe you're not really defending hacking the phone of a girl who's committed suicide.
Well, I believe that's what I've done, you know.
Well, but understand.
But Phil, help me explain this to your audience. I'm not saying that the reporter hacked the phone. I would not hack the phone of a troubled youth or a troubled young lady, or, for instance, the young lady in Missouri, the Megan Meyer, who committed suicide after being harassed by that neighbor. But this was a phone that had been owned but was no longer owned by this girl.
Because she committed suicide.
Technically, that is exactly right. And so she committed suicide, and so her phone no longer had an owner. And if you're hacking in, and that's the technical, I'm being very technical now, Phil. We can get into the human side of this in a moment, but I'm being very technical, and I'm approaching it from the job that I've got to do. And the job that I've got to do is file a report and file a story that people are going to read. And
well, you know what? There's a lot of reasons why people read stories. Sometimes they read them because they're really interesting, but they have nothing to do with the facts. You know?
I'm advocating for facts. I'm advocating for facts.
Well, yes, you are, but you're advocating for facts at the expense of privacy.
No, I'm not. I'm not advocating for facts at the expense of privacy. I'm advocating for facts in exchange for information that can further secure society. So I'm asking for the right to be able to hack a telephone for a news story if I exchange what information I have found with the police or with the security services or with people who would be interested in information I've found. I use it for my news story, and they use whatever else I might have found And
so you become some kind of a de facto Gestapo agent, you know?
Well, I don't want to be that dramatic, Phil. I don't think we have to go to the historic comparisons of Hitler either, you know?
But in a lot of ways, all right, so, but you're not Gestapo, but it's like you're an informer. You know what I'm saying?
No, we're not a citizen, an anonymous citizen dropping an information slip into a box that no one knows who we are, and we're informing on someone. Everyone knows who I am, and everyone who reads my work knows who I am. Everyone knows our news service. Nobody is trying to hide. We're saying that we're trying to survive, and the only way to survive as a reporter, as a journalist, as a gatherer of information in this day and age is by having access to telephones, to hack telephones of individuals that are not super personalities. And that's where I'm drawing the line right here.
All right, so you're drawing the line at Scarlett Johansson. You're drawing the line at anybody that's famous. And to you, that is a concession. And
it's not so much a concession. It's actually a financial consideration. Because if you hack the phone of a Scarlett Johansson, she has attorneys that are going to, in a civil case, are going to take you to court, and they're most probably going to attempt to outlast the corporate resources of the company that they're suing, because she has the money to hire the lawyers. If on the other end of the example, you're hacking the phone of a private citizen who's not particularly well known, and they have decided to turn and sue you civilly, you can certainly, with the resources of a major news corporate, major news agency or a publication or what have you, can contend with that in the courtroom much more readily.
All right, so you've got the money to back down a private citizen whose phone you've hacked, even though, you know, you're saying what you're doing is legal and maybe they filed a lawsuit against you. And so the little guy loses again. That's what I'm hearing here.
I don't see how the little guy loses again. The little guy's me. The little guy is every other journalist. You know, how's the little guy losing when I'm trying to find ways to keep my profession afloat?
Well, you're doing it at the expense of someone. I mean, I think still the example of this girl who committed suicide, and so this reporter for News of the World went in and hacked her telephone, and you know, this is just, excuse me for saying it, this is just the bottom of the barrel, you know?
Well, it sounds like the bottom of the barrel, unless you look at it straight on and factually. He did not hack her phone. He hacked a phone.
Well, you're saying, okay, it wasn't her phone because she was no longer alive, and so it wasn't owned by anybody.
I'm saying that, and I'm also saying that this was vital information, most likely for the safety of the of young people. Vital information on mental health. Vital information on the state of thinking and being of our youth today. No, I don't think there was anything wrong. I think we had, and on top of that, to be able to scoop the story the way he did, I think ensured further employment and further the furthering of our profession much more along the way.
All right, Terry Broomfield is with us here. He is talking to us tonight from London, and the conversation we're having is about phone hacking. The hacking of this phone, a girl who had committed suicide, by a News of the World reporter was at the center of, and there were other examples of this controversy surrounding Rupert Murdoch over this past summer. Terry's saying that the game of journalism and reporting is so competitive now that you have to be allowed a limited amount of hacking, at least a limited amount of hacking of the phones of unknown people. Celebrities should still be protected. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And we're online at philhenryshow.com. And we'll be right back with Terry Broomfield here in just one moment.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
A little bit of coffee and a little small amount of cream, please.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and Terry Broomfield is on the line with us here as we're discussing the hacking scandal, the Rupert Murdoch hacking scandal. Let me just put it to you straight so that there is no misunderstanding. I respect you, Terry. But anybody that hacks phones, any reporter that hacks phones, I don't think much of that individual. Rupert Murdoch, who was able to slime his way around the House of Commons this summer, gave a whole lot of doublespeak, gave a whole lot of double talk, is obviously split with his son, so maybe it isn't so much Rupert as is the son. I think that guy sets the tone. Anybody who runs a company sets the tone. And, you know, they tried to fire him, and they were not able to fire him. Do you think he should have been fired?
Well, I will tell you this right now, Phil. I don't know, in my opinion. I can tell what your opinion is obviously you think he should have been fired. I don't think that I don't think the whole story's come out, to be honest. It's impossible for the corporate head of any entity to know what's going on in every little division that his company owns.
Well, I mean, but that's the excuse, isn't it? That's what they say. They say, well, it's impossible for me to know everything. But the competitive nature of the business that you have just pointed out, coupled with the fire that is in the gut of the individuals that are managing and motivating, coupled with a certain, I don't know, corporate culture, why can't I lay this at the feet of Rupert Murdoch?
Well, you can lay it at the feet of Rupert. You can lay at the feet of Rupert Murdoch the competitiveness of the company. But then the entire profession is very competitive. And that's why I'm on your program this evening saying something that might be an icebreaker, if you will, or something that can move this debate forward. And that is that we have to be very upfront in saying that we're going to attempt to hack into the public airwaves, which do carry the signals of these cellular communications. We're not tapping into a fixed land communication. We're not tapping into a fixed telephone line communication so much as we are eavesdropping on a publicly transmitted signal over the public airwaves. This is something in the United States that's controlled by the Federal Communications Commission, and in Great Britain it's controlled by UKI. These are the federal communications authorities, and So is it really hacking or is it eavesdropping? And if I use the information that I have supposedly hacked and I give that to the police and the police act on it, then why isn't that a legal action? I've got to keep my living going. I've got to keep my profession going. I've got to...
Then why wouldn't it keep your profession going more readily if you were hacking into Scarlett Johansson?
I'm not going to hack into Scarlett Johansson for a number of reasons. These are powerful people that you have to keep on your side. I know it sounds hypocritical to say that I'd rather tap into the phone that was at one time owned by a girl that eventually committed suicide. It was at one time owned by a girl. The girl committed suicide, and now the phone is not owned by anyone. And
well, what does that mean, that it's not owned by anyone? The law says that all of these items, all of these personal effects revert to or are in fact the control of the, or in the control of the family. And she was a minor, and
that all of that is true. But you asked me, was it hacking into a privately owned telephone? I'm telling you, no. While the phone is in the care of the family, it was owned by this girl. When the girl committed suicide, the phone suddenly was unowned. It was just a phone that happened to have that was turned on.
Well, what do you mean it was just a phone that was turned on?
Exactly what I said. So,
all right, but you're telling me that the phone no longer is owned by anyone, and so anything that's on or in that phone, you can hack into.
Well, first of all, no one's using the phone. There's no one using the phone. There's no phone conversation that's going on, so I'm not, quote, hacking into a phone conversation. I'm not eavesdropping a phone conversation. What I am doing is accessing a unit that is unowned. And the law says that possession is 9 points law. Now, I don't have that phone in my possession, but I know where it is, and I know how to get into it. So doesn't that mean, in some sense, I have some de facto ownership?
And aren't you doing a whole lot of flips and twists, man, and a whole lot of mental gymnastics to try and, you know, to try to justify what you're doing here?
No, I'm not doing that at all.
Well, you're saying that here is a phone that no one owns, and so therefore it's sort of like lost, and so I think I'll just pick it up and hack into it. In this instance, you're not picking it up and hacking into it, but you're getting into the phone, and there's nobody to tell you not to do it. except for the family members. And eventually this guy, you know, Murdoch was eventually had to pay out an out-of-court settlement of $3.2 million. So the court acknowledges that it was privately held.
The court may acknowledge that. What I'm saying is, in fact, it is not the case. And we have to recognize what the fact of the case is. And then, and only then, can reporters begin to do their jobs. If I'm able to access private information off of your phone, Phil, and I'm not going to tell anybody except the police, if there's something the police need to know, that's all I'm going to do. And why are you, unless you're doing something...
Phil Hendry.
We'll be right back.
What's that?
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. On the line with us here is Terry Broomfield. He is with National News as we continue talking to Terry about the phone hacking scandal. And that the most recent bit of information from the phone hacking scandal is a $3.2 million payout to the family of a girl who committed suicide whose phone was hacked by his newspaper, Mr. Murdoch, News of the World. Terry, you're talking about the necessity of hacking telephones for reporters to do their job, and the need for the hacking of telephones to stop at private citizens, to stop at regular people and not extend to celebrities. And I don't know that you've exactly, backed that up.
I've mentioned it.
Well, no, you've said that, you want to be protected from the lawsuits of famous and powerful people, which means you want to hack the little guy.
No, it's not the case.
That's exactly what you want to do.
It's not the case we want to hack the little guy, is the way you put it. The reality is the little guy, if you want to call him the little guy, is the average citizen, is an individual who is in less of a position to damage my profession or damage my newspaper, damage my broadcasting company, what have you, with a lawsuit. Because he may not have the resources that a Scarlett Johansson or some other person has. And so to hack their phone...
Well, no, wait a minute. This was a private citizen. This was the family of a private citizen who you say the reporter had every right to hack her phone because she was no longer alive, so the phone wasn't owned by anybody. But the fact is, Murdoch had to pay this out. This was... It was £2 million, $3.2 million, ordered by a court in Great Britain.
That's right. And our proposal would be the law would be changed. The law would be changed so that it is legal to hack the phone of an individual whose economic prowess or their earnings are at such a level as that it's realistic. And
so you want a law that says you can hack the phone of somebody who's not making a lot of money?
Well, I didn't say that, but I did say that we want to be able to hack the phone of individuals that make a certain amount of money, so there's a less of a chance that that person will have the resource to sue us. But again, you're missing the trade-off. The trade-off is that I hack into the phone of that individual, I give that information to the police, whatever information I can. And you call that informing, or Gestapo, and I found that I wasn't offended so much as I was... shocked at the lack of reality there.
You don't think that that's informing on someone. As a reporter, you're hacking into their phone, and then if you hear of any illegal activity, you turn this stuff over to the police? And you don't feel that makes you into some sort of a minion for the government, for the police?
No, I don't. Not at all, no. There have been many, many examples of the press working hand-in-hand with the police in order to ferret out... criminals and lawbreakers. No, I don't consider that at all. As I said, I've got a job to do, and I'm going to do that job to the very best. Otherwise, I don't know what else to do. Our profession is slowly rotting from the inside out,
And what? Well, what's happening to it is the lack of planning on the part of the people that own the newspapers and the broadcast companies and the competition you're getting from the internet and a million and one other things.
Right, all right. And I've heard that speech before, but I'm saying that the way to address the situation is with these solutions that I've given. And unless people want to take it seriously. I'm going to be out of a job. A lot of newspaper reporters are going to be out of a job, but it's not going to be a very, very pleasant situation at all for all concerned. So that's my most concern.
We'll go to a phone call here, and Jerry, hi, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hi, Phil. The reporter you have on the phone right now reminds me of a man that I heard speaking once at a university when I went to a lecture hall. I was taking a history class, and he said that, and this was a man, by the way, who represented a political party of which I will not mention the name, and he said, you know, in show business, they have a guy who sweeps up behind the elephant. And when someone approached the guy that sweeps behind the elephant and said, why do you do such a dirty job? He said, what, and get out of show business? And your guest reminds me of that guy. You are saying to him, Phil, very intelligently, why are you doing this? Your profession, it seems, is an anachronism, and perhaps it's time to reassess the profession, but why are you, instead of reassessing your profession, indulging in this kind of, cleaning up behind the elephant?
Well, I don't know if the gentleman's finished.
Yes, I'm waiting for your answer, because I don't see any difference between what you're doing and the guy who had the broom and was cleaning up behind the elephant and said, what, and get out of show business?
Right, I heard your example, sir, and I'm not quite sure that it applied, but nonetheless, I think I understand what you're saying, that I'm in a profession that I find to be less than successful as an enterprise. I'm a good reporter, but how many reporters are we going to need in the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years when everyone is a reporter, you know?
Well, that's the whole point. I don't know why I need a circus to go to when I can open up my laptop and I've got a virtual circus on my laptop, you see. And
all right, well, you guys are talking about the internet. That it seems like everything...
Well, that's exactly right.
Well, everything gets back to the internet these days. Everything gets back to that. But what this gentleman, what you're saying here, Jerry, I think is...
Well, I'll tell you what I'm saying. I'm saying... If the only job you have to do in the circus is to clean up behind the elephant, then I'd get out of show business. You know?
Well, I don't think that what I do is clean up behind an elephant by a far side.
Well, I do. I do.
Well, I can tell you, sir, that I'm not characterizing your profession as scooping up the dung of an animal.
I didn't tell you what my profession was, but you're talking about your profession. That's what we're talking about right now.
That's exactly correct. You're right. But I will, and if you want to say that I'm in less than a noble profession, well, by all means, you're more than welcome to do that, and you're more than welcome to say that. But don't do it in a roundabout and less than honest way by saying, well, it reminds me of this and that. It took you about at least a full minute to spit out what it was you were trying to say with a ridiculous comparison to the man that scoops up behind the elephant.
Well, you know, okay, point made, but you still haven't answered my question. If you're scooping up behind an elephant, why are you still in show business?
And I believe I answered your question. The answer to my question.
What? No, you're answering my question.
The answer to your question, right?
Yeah, I asked the question, and you're answering your question.
I'm answering your question right now.
No, he's answering your question, Jerry.
Right, I'm answering your question, and your question is why am I still in show business? Because I'm a damn good. And you're asking me about the man who sweeps up behind the elephant. Because I'm a damn good acrobat. Because I'm a damn good...
Well, I don't think so. I don't think so, and I don't think a lot of readers think so.
Excuse me, but I'm a damn good acrobat. And a lot of readers do think so. We've got a very healthy circulation. We just don't have the vibrant circulation, and we don't have the vibrant the reporting that we used to have, because we're kept out of so many things. And
well, you're saying being kept out of things is not being able to hack into the phone of a little girl that committed suicide. That's a fool's errand, my friend. And if I were that child's father, I would not want you to have access to that cell phone neither. And would you...
Let me ask you, Terry, would you want anybody to have access to your kid's phone if she'd committed suicide?
I would, if it was within reason, if there was information... And
your own kid I'm talking about now.
Yes, I would. Because I'd like to find out why the child committed suicide, and I'd like to know some things. One of the things parents don't have is access to their own children's computers and cell phones, and sometimes it takes them committing suicide for you to be able to get into the...
Well, that's the stupidest thing that I ever heard. That's the stupidest thing that I ever heard. And I've been on a trans-pack race, and I once juggled shot glasses, and I've never heard anything like that.
All right, Jerry, thank you very much for your call. 877-876-PHIL is our number here. We're talking with Terry Broomfield from the National News and his discussion of the hacking scandal last summer extending itself to today, where a $3.2 million payout, that is a £2 million payout, to a family of a girl who committed suicide by Rupert Murdoch, is bringing into full relief once again the idea of hacking phones, the tawdry and nasty and just lower than low business of hacking into the phone of a child that took her own life. What is at the root of all of this? And what is the profession of journalism and of reporting, what they used to call the Fifth Estate? Does it exist anymore? As we were just saying to Terry, is it just a matter of time before really it goes away and that everybody, you and me, we become the reporters, the blog... The online blog becomes our daily fare, and we are more and more responsible for our own news. We'll be back with more here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We have Steve Bozell coming up next hour as well, so don't go away.
The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
I don't even know how to hang the phone up. How do I hang the phone up?
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Last few minutes here with Terry Broomfield, and I really appreciate you, being on the line with us here, Terry, because I don't think that, it can't be easy, you know, where you're taking hits from people making the statements that you're making, but they're very controversial statements. You know, they're statements having to do with the use of hacked phones and the use of hacked information. In order to press home the case that you guys need this information so that you can write a news article, so I appreciate that, but I don't know how you can continue to make the argument that the hacked phone of a kid that committed suicide,
it's not an easy argument to make, Phil, but there's nothing I can do. I've got to keep above the fray and say, well, I've got a job to do. And I'm going to do that job the best way I know how. And if I have to, hack the phone of a 13-year-old girl who committed suicide by hanging herself from a beam in the garage, as sick as that is, and it's sick, there's no question. And I would go home at night and I would stare at myself in a mirror and I'd probably have to drink myself to sleep. Nonetheless, it's a living that I've got to make. And I'll make that living. Don't worry about it. I'll make that living. If it was yesterday, it's a different story. You know? It's four hits up there right now, so I'll make that living. Don't worry about it.
Okay, let's go to Ted in Beverly Hills on the Phil Hendry Show. Hey, Ted, how you been tonight? We have Terry Broomfield.
Hey, Phil, enjoying your program immensely. And Mr. Broomfield, I wanted to say that I've read your articles in the news, and I find them to be outstanding.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk a little bit. I own a restaurant. Phil is aware of Ted's of Beverly Hills as a freestanding business now for the last 35 years. Now, I don't know anything about the journalism game other than the fact that I know a lot of journalists, and I can tell you they have imbibed a large amount of my spirits at my...
As journalists will
at my cocktail lounge. In that way, I've gotten to know them. But in all seriousness, if you hacked my phone, and I am not necessarily a celebrity, but I can tell you this: I'll be dipped and redipped if you think I'm just a regular guy. Where does a guy like Ted Bell evolve?
Well, I'm not quite familiar with the your business. I know that you've got a steakhouse there in Beverly Hills,
and I'm very well known to a great many people in the entertainment industry.
Right. So, I would have to make a call on the side of hacking your phone, and here's why: you're not a celebrity. So, if you were to sue me, people in London or people in New York or people in Philadelphia, Paris, or places like this, they're not going to know the name Ted Bell. They'll know the name on the West Coast.
You better believe they will. In Hollywood, they'll know the name. In Hollywood.
That is true, but they're not going to know the names in New York and some of the other larger metropolitan areas of the world if this made it into the press. And
yeah, but they know the name in Hollywood is what I'm saying.
Now, you already made the point to know the name in Hollywood, but that's one town, Hollywood, you know. And yes, I would hack your phone, and I would very happily hack your phone.
And then, of course, I've got to sue you, and I have to sue you until the loss of blood makes you drop to the paper.
Well, then, of course, between you and my newspaper, because I'm indemnified, you know, I'm not...
You see, that's the part I can't take, Phil. You can't get at these guys because they're indemnified.
Well, they're not going to get a job. They're not going to be able to do their job unless they're indemnified by their company. You know,
but it bothers me because I can't get at. He's the guy that I'd want to get at. You know,
that's exactly. Of course, you want to get at me, but you're never going to get at me. And we know that in the newspaper business, we know it in the news gathering business, and so that's why all reporters are indemnified by their company, and they're protected from being individually named. Although a lot of people have tried.
Well, I got to tell you something. That really. So you would drag my name through the mud, and if I tried to sue you, I wouldn't be allowed to because you're indemnified by your company. And
well, you could do it, yeah, right, Terry?
Yeah, right. You could sue me, but ultimately, I'm not held responsible by my employment contract.
Well, that takes all the fun of the lawsuit out of the suit, because the only fun I'm going to have suing you would be suing you.
Right, well, I guess you're out of fun then, because you're not going to have any fun, because they're not going to let you sue me. It's not going to happen, you know.
Yeah. All right, Phil, that's all I had to say. I appreciate very much. I'm glad I could call up and help save your... and call in.
Thank you very much. Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills here on the Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, as we're talking with Terry Broomfield here. And we're talking with Terry about the Rupert Murdoch phone hacking scandal. And what an unbelievable scandal it has been because of the extent, because of the fact that it brought down this entire newspaper, Terry, the fact that News of the World, which was some 150 years old, gone.
Well, you know, Rupert Murdoch made that call, Phil. I don't think, and I mean this, I do not think News of the World had to be closed. I don't think they had to shutter that operation at all. I think it would have come back. I think it would have perhaps suffered a bit in the short term, but understand, newspapers, especially newspapers of the variety of News of the World, are being sued all the time. And people almost come to expect that a newspaper like News of the World is going to be sued. The phone hacking scandal could have been handled by firing, a very high-level firing of a lot of people, maybe even firing his own son, I don't know. Talking openly, maybe on a front page editorial about how we would not put up with this and we're not going to put up with that, but we're still going to continue to try and get the news that you want. We went overboard this time. At the bottom line, they never had to close that newspaper. But Rupert Murdoch closed that newspaper. And the reason why he closed that newspaper, I think, is to get that son and whoever else his son is associated with out of his life.
And oh, really?
I firmly believe that. I think he saw the opportunity to finally just cut his son loose and force this kid out into the world to make a living on his own, to make an honest living on his own, and not have to be tied to his daddy's apron strings, and go out and get a job, you know, as you like to say get a job, you know, as you like to say in America. And
do that again. That was very good.
Get a job, says somebody. You know, I guess I'll have to be in a talent show this year at the Christmas party. But
well, that was very good, you know. But nonetheless, I think it goes beyond a guy just, quote, getting a job. I think that, you know, this guy is a part of that corporation. He's a part of that company. He's part of that family. And is very much the heir apparent.
He might be the heir apparent, but I don't think Rupert Murdoch wants his son anywhere near his businesses. If anything were to happen to Rupert Murdoch, I think it would kill him quicker knowing that his son was about ready to take control. So keep an eye on the son. And if Rupert Murdoch does fall ill, keep an eye on him to die very quickly, because his heart won't be able to stand the strain of knowing his son is about to take over that company.
God, man, where did you get that information?
Because I've got ears in my head and I've got eyes in my head. That's where did I get the information? Because I can think, I can look, and I can hear. You know.
Well, all right. So you're a good reporter, Terry. Thank you very much. Thanks for being with us, and we'll look forward to more of your views there from the other side of the pond.
On the other side of the pond, right?
All right, Terry Broomfield. There.
He's gonna hack into your phone.
Yeah, you missed that, didn't you?
I didn't miss it. He said he'd hack into my phone if he had reason to hack into my phone. Good luck. World famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876. Phil will be right back.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're online at philhendryshow.com with a backstage pass. Why, you can just, you know, have yourself a ball, man, doing what you need to do and doing it your way, you know, and that is checking out the thousands of hours of archived material.
There's one. What, I didn't know you was going to go with that.
Yeah, what'd that mean?
What do you know, you did it again.
Sorry.
You did it again.
I'm sorry.
I'm starting an hour, and you guys, wait, what are you guys trying to do? You know, you. I'll say whatever I want to say if it sounds stupid. What is your problem now, bud?
Well, what do you mean do what you want to do?
I was very absentmindedly flipping through the news, flipping through a pile of news, and whatever came out of my mouth came out of my mouth. It is not your job to say,
gee, what did that mean?
It's your job to make it work.
Oh, okay. Yeah, do what are you going to do?
That's perfect, bud. Thanks. Anyway, go to our website and get a backstage pass and find out what it's all about. As you know, we're giving away one free month of access to the Phil Hendry Show website, philhendryshow.com. In order to enter the drawing, all you have to do is go to our fan page at Facebook, which is facebook.com/ Phil Hendry Fans, PHANS, Phil Hendry Fans, PHANS, and like the page. Just give it a like, baby. Now, if you've already done that, then what we would have you do is go over to Twitter. And go to twitter.com/ Phil Hendry Show and hashtag PHS. That's twitter.com/ Phil Hendry Show, hashtag PHS. And we will enter you guys into a drawing at the end of the month to get one free month, the month of November, free to our great website, the Phil Hendry Show website. And by the way, what was I going to say? I plumb forgot. Oh, we made an announcement during our pre-show tonight that we will not share on the air because it's information that only our subscribers get. It was an announcement having to do with the further adventures of our show and our creative efforts. It was an announcement having to do with our creative efforts teaming with another creative entity. And it was an announcement that was given to our subscribers and unfortunately will not be shared on air, even though it's really hot showbiz news. Bud, take it away.
Hey!
That's enough. All right, so 877-876-PHIL. Now, we're going to bring on Stephen Bozell of Corona, California. Mr. Bozell was with us a few months ago when the prediction was made by this well-known California minister, religious minister, preacher, that the end was nigh, or redemption was nigh, or the rapture was rupturing, or something. Forgive me, folks, I don't mean to. I don't want to mock anybody's religion, but by the same token, there comes a time when you have to sort of begin to mock, because some of these things are ridiculous. Even Christians themselves have been talking about this, and not all in glowing terms. Stephen, how are you tonight?
Well, I guess like a lot of people, Mr. Andrew, I'm a little bit disappointed.
Because today was the second date, wasn't it?
Today was the second date that was called for by this reverend who, his name right now escapes me.
Can we get the name of that reverend? I forget. I don't know if we have the news story, but today was this was the recalibrated date?
This was a date that he, after looking at scripture and deciding that he had made some faulty calculations in calculating the date of the rapture, decided that he would go back to scripture and then reassess. And as you say, Phil, and he came up with the date October 21st. And there were millions of us who, being you know, believers and who have followed him, Reverend Camping, just now remembered it.
If you follow him, how come you don't remember his name?
I had gone through a period there where I've tried to just blank it out. If you remember, Mr. Henry, I'd gone on to your show and. Excuse me, but my wife is trying to distract me, and I won't allow it. I won't allow it.
What do you mean your wife's trying to distract you?
My wife has sent me on my cell phone. She's sending me photographs of herself. And
well, okay, I don't understand.
Hold on for a minute, honey. My wife sent me pictures of herself. What happened? This started earlier in the day when I had said to her that today is the rapture, and she laughed. And I said, you know, and my wife mocked me and said that I'm not a religious man, and I'm a very religious man. So she started taking photographs of herself and texting them to me all day long, and she just sent me another batch.
Are these, she's naked?
Yes, sir. They're of certain parts of her, and, so, if you could just excuse me for 1 second, sir.
All right. We're talking with Stephen Bozell.
Please don't do that. Please don't do that, honey. I know, I think you're beautiful, but you show me those. You show me those. You know what happened. I believe in Jesus Christ, Mr. Henry. I believe in God, and I believe in our Lord, and I believe in anything, you know, all of that, God, the Lord. But when my wife sends me pictures, you know, I love my wife, and we have two children, and she sent me photographs of the...
Okay. Are you distracted? Can you not...
No, I can talk, because I believe that I need to. But what's going on is...
Is your wife mocking you? Is your wife making fun of you?
Well, part of it is to mock me, because I had said to her today that... this morning I said today's the day, and I wanted her to get the children, you know, groomed and combed and ready.
When you say groomed, what do you mean, Steve?
I wanted my children to have their clothes on, to be presentable. Today was the day of the rapture, and I wanted my children to, not that they're going to enter heaven, but I do believe that they should be presentable, and I wanted them to have their hair slicked you know, have a certain buzz cut, and I don't know.
What do you mean buzz cut?
Well, I just wanted them to get a two-step and to have their hair greased and just be ready to be
received by God.
Yes, sir. And
and were the children frightened?
Why would my children be frightened, sir?
Well, did you tell them that today was the rapture?
No, sir. I just said that today we're going to. Today I want you to look very good, because today is a very special day.
And did you tell them that? Did they know today was the day that some people think was the rapture?
Yes, sir. They did.
And how did they know that?
Well, they probably heard me talking about it.
were your children, but your kids were not scared.
My children were not scared, and I blame my wife, and I don't blame my wife because they were not scared. I blame my wife because they were not concerned, and my wife thought the whole thing was a joke. And she sent me just now a picture of her private area and her and a picture of her breasts. And
well, that sounds kind of like she's just having some fun with you.
Yes, sir. It would be, except she knows that I get distracted by that.
Well, I think any man, any husband would.
Okay, but my wife is really beautiful. And she knows that I know that she's beautiful, and she still does it.
And well, wait, Steve, let's back up here for a second here, okay? Because I don't want to keep talking to you like you're 5 years old, sir, okay?
I was not aware you're doing that, sir.
Well, yeah, yes, I am, and it's kind of bothering me, because let's talk straight up, you and me. You just said to me your wife's beautiful. Your wife is having fun with you. They're sending pictures, nude pictures of her. Today you're worried about a rapture. You had your kids all dressed up. You know, I got to ask you something. This guy camping, he predicted the end of the world a few months ago. It didn't happen. Why are you believing this guy again?
I believe Reverend Camping, sir, because I have faith that he is a illuminated and fully lit up and has a big Klieg light. He's got God's, he's all lit up.
What do you mean he's lit up? What does that mean? Okay?
You don't know what that means.
In my parlance, in my culture, lit up means you're stoned or you've been smoking weed or you're drunk.
I beg your pardon?
That's what lit up means to me. What do you mean he's lit up?
I mean he's illuminated, sir.
All right, sir, then please say that. Okay?
I did say that.
Yeah, you did say it. They said he's all lit up. Okay, so you believe...
I did say that he was illuminated and that he was lit up. And illuminated and lit up are the same thing. And I believe that God has chosen him to be the voice, to be the messenger, to send to man and to woman to... That's man, you know, and to...
Are you nervous? Because I'm going to take a break and I've got to... You know, I'm running on very little patience here. You know...
Well, Mr. Ender, if you're jealous, my wife sent me, you know, pictures of it.
No, am I jealous? Look, here's what bothers me. You and I talked about this rapture thing last May. Now you're coming back on, and you're going to tell me about this other rapture thing that didn't happen either. I've heard Christians say that Scripture is very clear. No man will know the time or the place. No man can know when God will call souls home to heaven. These are Christians that have told me this. So I have them backing me up. So this isn't even a Christian thing. This is a Harold Camping thing. And you haven't adequately told me yet why you continue to espouse this man's teachings and why you continue to blame society for the fact that he's been wrong. Okay? Our number...
Well, Mr. Andrew, I want to respond to that.
Would you, I'm going to give you a chance to respond to that. Our number is 877...
Well, I just want to jump...
Oh, no, but hold on. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show with Stephen Bozell on Harold Camping's Dud Number 2.
Well, that's
truth
pretty cool.
Is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
And it's the world famous Phil Henry Show here, 877-876-PHIL. And let me just get over to the picture I've got here. If, for those of you watching Phil TV in HD, there is Harold Camping. He looks like something out of a... somebody just said he looks like the old guy in Poltergeist 2. Friday is the new doomsday, Christian Radio Network says. This is from the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Company. When the California Christian group known as Family Radio predicted the beginning of the end of the world as we know it back in the spring, for the first time, Harold Camping and his followers splashed dire warnings on billboards around the globe. But then nothing happened on May the 21st. That's when that was, Steve.
And I want to make the additional point.
Hold on. There was no rapture, and true believers were not swept to heaven while everyone else was left waiting to be consumed in the total destruction of the earth, on October the 21st. Despite that setback, the California-based group is still looking on Friday as a day of reckoning, even if its predictions have been toned down. There's no billboards this time, and the 90-year-old camping has shifted from definitive language to adding the word probably. So if history repeats itself, the world will be just fine on Saturday. In fact, one observer expects Family Radio, which describes itself as nonprofit, non-commercial Christian radio, will keep sending out its signals, too. I suspect Family Radio will endure yet another failure on the 21st. What has happened with Family Radio is a typical pattern for these kinds of groups. First, there's the brouhaha around the end-of-the-world prediction, the recruiting of followers and believers, and then a kind of deflation and disappointment among them when the prediction doesn't come true. That tends to be followed quickly by a reinterpretation by the leadership. The thing that amazes me and Mr. Bozell.
Well, I want to say something here, Mr. Henry. First of all, talking about me and talking about everybody. Boy, they're running us down like dogs just because we believe in this man. And
no, hold on. You didn't hear what I just read there, and this is something that needs to be addressed. Why is it when these predictions are not true, why do you and others continue to believe in these people? And what's to believe in? The guy's wrong. He's wrong.
Mr. Henry, he did not say the world's going to end. He said the world may end or there may be a rapture, but probably not.
No, he didn't say that at all. He is recovering from a stroke he had in June. He's now speaking in more measured tones. He's talked, according to reports, of the end coming very, very quietly, probably within the next month on October the 21st. When are you going to just admit that the guy he doesn't know what he's talking about?
He is a man that has helped a lot of people. He helped me out. I've never met him, but he has helped me out by allowing me to go outside of myself and quit thinking so much about myself and quit thinking so much about my family and quit thinking so much about my mother. My mother had a stroke. Speaking of, strokes, my mother had a stroke 2 years ago, and all I ever did was think about her. And Harold
Camping got you to think about his stroke.
Okay, I don't think that's funny at all.
Well, isn't it true?
In what true?
Harold Camping got you to think about his stroke instead of your mom's.
Harold Camping never asked me for a thing. I believed in him, and every time that we've said and tried to say to people that the world is in big trouble, I don't know if you've been reading newspapers, Mr. Henry, but the world's in big trouble. There's stuff, Wall Street and everything.
The world's in big trouble. The world's been in big trouble since I was born. The world's going to be in big trouble after I'm gone. The world's in big trouble.
Do you think the world was in big trouble when Jesus was born? No, the world was in doing good because Jesus was born.
Yeah, the world was in big trouble then, too. That's why Jesus was born, because the world was in big trouble then. If you read the Bible, and here's the thing that I find to be very interesting. We talk about how horrible things are today. Jesus came back at a time when the world was a much simpler place. There were much simpler people afoot and around. There was much smaller societies. There was fewer individuals on the face of the earth. And there was mankind operating in this kind of post-Stone Age, developing status. And yet, there was Jesus Christ talking about how sinful the human race was and what wretchedness and wickedness there was. And, my God, you'd think he was talking about the 21st century. So when we talk about how wretched and sinful and wicked the world is, how much better have things gotten, or how much worse have things gotten since Jesus was around? Because, to be honest with you, he came and he spread his message, and he got crucified for it. And now here we are 2,000 years later. The world has continued to grow and develop, and yet there's still wickedness.
Well, I don't know what you're trying to say. Did you say he came for no reason?
No, I didn't say that at all. But what I'm saying is we can make all of these hard and fast predictions about things, but life is just going to kind of go on the way it's going on, isn't it?
No, I don't think so. I think the world can still be ended because, guess what? Newsflash for you. It's only 11:25 on the West Coast.
Well, what does that mean?
That means that the world has not the world on the East Coast, the world's ended, or it hasn't ended. It's not going to end on the East Coast until it obviously has got to end on the West Coast. but the West Coast has not had the chance to come to an end. And what I'm okay, hold on. What I'm saying,
you're saying that because the
hold on, I'd like to save the way I want to save, Mr. Henry, instead of having you button in.
Okay, but I gotta, you know, you're not doing it very well.
Please let me do it. The world is not yet ended because the West Coast is now 11:26. Okay, so there's 24 minutes left, or not 24.
34 minutes, you idiot.
Bud, come on.
Who just called me an idiot, please?
Never mind.
I'd like to know who called me an idiot.
Bud Dittman did, Mr. Bozell.
But who?
My name isn't Bud, it's Bud.
You called me an idiot?
Yeah, you said it's 24 minutes, you idiot. It's 34.
Don't you... Boy, oh boy, when a Gloid goes after me like that... And
all right, let's forget about what he said. The world's going to end in now 33 minutes, because we've been arguing for a whole minute about how long from midnight we are. And so we still got a chance to come to an end. Is that it?
I'm just saying that technically he's not wrong. But I'm not saying that it's going to happen. But I'm saying it probably won't. But I am saying, yeah, you're right, it probably won't. Okay?
I don't know what you're saying.
The thing of it is, Mr. Bozell, is you came on our show and you went on other shows last May. You were wrong. You screwed the whole thing up. Camping is wrong. I don't think anybody listening to me disagrees with me. Christians are listening to me. I'm preaching to the choir here, and you're a chorus of one. So I have to say I admire you for your guts.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome for coming on and continuing to press this point home. Let me ask you this. Do you believe, if the rapture doesn't happen in the next 33 minutes, do you believe that we have reached the end times nonetheless?
Yes, sir, I absolutely do. Now, that's something Christians are going to agree on. That's something Christians is going to agree on.
And we have reached the end times.
Yes, sir, boy. Never has it ever been more clear to me.
Okay, can you tell me why you think that?
If you look at the world today, there's a war going on, and there's earthquakes, and there's been, you know, tornadoes and everything. And
all right, hold on. We're going to come back with Stephen Bozell here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show as he tells us why he still believes the end times are upon us, even though Harold Camping was wrong for the second time. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
What an idiot, what the guy said.
All right, bud, thank you.
You idiot.
Phil Henry.
You are an idiot.
Listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
World famous Phil Henry Show, as we're talking here with Stephen Bozell of Corona, California, on the unfortunately, Steve, and there's nothing you can really say about it. It's true, the fact that the second prediction by Harold Camping that the rapture would take place, it didn't take place, and here we are.
Well, you know, Mr. Henry, I don't want to see our world come to an end. If that's what God has willed and He's decided, no. I feel bad that God has decided to step on a man like Harold Camping, who's done so much to try to make people...
He's done so much to try to make people what?
I mean, he's trying to make people see the Word of God. He's not going to apologize to no reporters. He's not going to say, oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Reporter, I was wrong about... You know, Harold Camping, all he knows and all I know and all anybody should know is what God said. And
well, does he know what God said?
I believe, yeah, he knows what God said. He knows what God said to him, and then he knows what God said to him, and he knows that that's what Mr. Camper, Reverend Camper, or Dr., you know, he's got a lot of titles.
Well, let's call him Reverend, okay?
Well, okay, but he has a doctorate, and he's a doctor. And
a doctor of what?
He's a doctor of gonad. He's a doctor.
Shut up, man. Bud, that's uncalled for.
Boy, that was very... Boy, oh boy. If you were my son, I'd smack you.
Bud, uncalled for.
What?
Don't say that stuff. He's a doctor of what, sir?
I'm still reeling from what that punk said. That punk kid. Some kid with some half-gloid...
Yeah, you're the only guy that's half-gloid. I saw Harold Camping on a TV show talk about Gloid, He looks like the king of the Gloid.
Yeah, I just heard what the kid said, and I want to demand an apology right now, sir.
Mr. Bo...
I demand an apology right now for the comment he made.
What did he say? I'm talking...
He said that Harold Campin looks like the king of the Gloid. I want an apology, and I also want it in writing. I want it on the air, and...
Okay, I'm sorry.
Why don't you get out of here and take a chill? Go get one of those root beers from Topper's.
I'll go with you, man.
Okay. I want to get the root beer with the raspberry.
God.
So you're going to give that kid a reward for saying that Harold Campin's the king of the Gloid, man? And
I'm not giving him a reward, sir. I'm getting him out of the studio, okay? I think both of them...
I heard what you said. Go over to Topper's Pizza and get yourself one of those root beers you like.
Yeah. Just get in the car and get out of here. I just want him out of here. 877-876-PHIL is the number here. I'm going to go to another phone call, and we have R.C. calling us from Altadena. R.C., how you doing? Go ahead.
Yeah, Phil, I'm calling in about the man that's on talking about Harold Campin. I'm a Bradley Military Academy, a military cadet of the academy. And I wanted to ask you if you think that if Harold Campin, if you think that he is mentally... If you think he's mentally wrong.
No, sir, I don't. I would not follow Harold Campin if I thought he was mentally wrong. And I don't know why you say that. But...
Have you ever visited Harold Campin between his knees? Because...
All right. Thank you very much. Cut him off. 877-876-PHIL.
Mr. Henry, if I'm going to be continually mocked and...
I'm sorry that call was not properly screened, okay?
Well, I heard what he said, and I hope that you clearly eliminated or cleared it out, or however you say what he said. Do I ever visit Harold Campin between his knees? And-
well, that's really good. So you repeat it, the very thing that I tried to edit out so you wouldn't be embarrassed. You go ahead and repeat it.
We're back.
What the hell are you guys doing back?
Yeah, I got my root beer.
Well, wait a minute. How did you guys get back so fast?
There wasn't a line.
Yeah, they didn't have any business.
Oh, there wasn't a line. The thing is, at least 2 miles away, you guys better not be speeding out there. 877-876-PHIL.
If that's the young man, I would like to get a apology on the Gloid comment at some point, if you don't mind.
I'd be happy to apologize. Not going to cry like a baby and everything.
I'm not crying like a baby, sir. I'm man. I'm all man. I'm 100% man. And I got news for you. For you to say the things that you said.
Okay, let's relax and let's not worry about Harold Campin being insulted. 877-876-PHIL. And from last night, we have Debbie Daly calling us. Debbie, how are you doing this evening?
Well, I'm really good. I wanted to join the gentleman in name, and I think that there are a lot of things at the end of the day. And I think that, you know, if I didn't have a room or even a name, I don't think I'd ever have a radio thing at the end of the day.
Okay, is this some kind of a joke or something?
No, she's hearing impaired, so she has a little bit of a problem. But Debbie Daly has Daly's Daily, which is a public radio show. So I can assure you she's well-known.
Well, I didn't understand. I don't understand what she said, and now that's going to make me cry.
Repeat it, if you wouldn't mind, Debbie.
Well, no, I mean, I'm coming to man, and I'm going to man, and I'm going to man, and I never would have had my radio show. And I never would mean really mean it.
I heard her say something about meeting it or ameliorating it.
No, she said if she didn't have a firm belief in Jesus Christ, she never would have survived and be the success that she is. She'd never have a radio show. So she does sympathize with you.
Oh, okay, ma'am. Thank you. I apologize for not understanding you.
Well,
you know what? You're absolutely right. And I do thank you for that.
Well, you didn't hear what she said.
What?
She said that even though she is a Christian, she thinks Harold Camping's wrong and made an ass out of himself 2 times in a row.
Well, I don't agree with that.
Then why did you say you did agree with it?
Because I thought she was... Man, all you're trying to do is trip me up. I don't understand what you're saying, ma'am. I wish I could understand what you're saying. I so dearly wish I could understand what you're saying, and that way you and I'd have a conversation. But instead, we're like a couple of gibbering idiots sitting on a curb someplace with a tin cup, waiting for the soup kitchen to open up. You're babbling away, and I'm sitting here. I've lost everything.
When you say you've lost everything...
What did she say? say?
She says, what did you mean by that?
I mean that my wife took my children, and she went off to her brother's house and is staying there for the next week until she says that I calm down and I pull it together, and I start to, you know, to man up and just pull it together.
So you're, so, okay, well, I can understand that.
What?
She said you can stay with her, but she's in New York City.
Boy, look at this. My wife just sent me another picture. She sent me another picture. See, I don't like that at all. She's calling me. Man,
your wife is sending you pictures of her breasts, is that it?
Yes, sir.
Well, it, obviously she misses you, okay? So why don't you invite her home and let bygones be bygones?
You think I ought
to? Yeah, I think you ought to. I think you ought to do that and quit messing around with Harold Camping, okay?
Yeah, quit being all gay for Harold Camping and everything.
Yeah.
I'm not gay for Harold Camping, thank you very much.
All right, Debbie, anyway, thanks for the call and continued success with your show. You had how many?
We have 250 affiliates.
You have 250 affiliates.
Right. We just picked up our new Infinity affiliate in Chicago.
You got 200, and you just picked up your latest affiliate in Chicago.
We did. Yeah, we're doing really good.
Yeah, you're doing really good. I mean, that's great.
What's wrong?
There's nothing wrong.
I know. Is there something wrong with Sherry?
No, there's nothing wrong. It's fine, it's fine, it's fine, Debbie, it's fine. 250 affiliates, you've got one in Chicago. Are you on in New York?
Oh, yeah, we're in all the top 10 markets.
You're on in all the top 10 markets. 250 affiliates on in all the top 10 markets.
Oh, I forgot to tell you that they're going to give me a Sunday morning shot on CBS,
And you may get a shot on CBS TV on Sunday mornings. It's whether it's Sunday morning or Sunday afternoon. All right, Debbie, thank you very much. Bye.
What do you want, Ben?
I'm not bent out of shape. Thank you very much, and goodbye. God.
What are you yelling at her for? She doesn't talk good.
Do you think? I'll tell you what I'm yelling at her, because I found out she's got 250 affiliates.
Yeah, so what?
So what? You can barely understand what she's saying. She's mumbling along, man, like... She's got 250 affiliates, the top 10 markets, and she's got a CBS shot. I'm beating my brains out here at night, and she's kicking ass, and I got to interpret for her.
Yeah, but she's Debbie Daly with Daily Daily, and she's got all the opinions there then on Wall Street.
Yeah.
What do you mean she's got all the opinions on Wall Street? Are you telling me that she's got some big liberal point of view?
Yeah, everybody listen to her to find out about the liberal point of view.
Yeah.
Well, so what, man? How do you guys even know? How do you know what she's talking about? And even if you could understand what she's saying, is she saying anything all that brilliant? Debbie Daly, everybody listens to her for the liberal point of view. All I hear coming out of her, man, it sounds like a stuck garage door.
You shouldn't make fun of no people that talk bad.
Yeah, you're right, bud. I won't make fun of people that talk bad.
God, man, you're really in an attitude. You got a bad attitude.
Well, when I find out that she's got 250 stations, where's our guest?
Got home.
Keep him there. 877-876-FIL. We're going to take a quick break. Get David Hall on the line.
What do you want from him?
That's none of your business. Get David Hall on the line.
All right.
We'll be right back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-FIL.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. And don't forget Nancy Grace on Dancing with the Stars. Now we are talking with Stephen Bozell.
What does that mean, Nancy Grace Dance with the Stars? Well, what is that about?
That's that is a part of a website thing I'm doing.
All I'm telling you is that I think, Mr. Henry, if you've been in touch with my wife and she's been sending you, she's not sending you pictures. I know she wouldn't do that, but is she sending you? I mean, not that, but has she told you that she's sending me pictures of her? of her breasts.
No, she has not told me that. Why?
Because my wife's built like Nancy Grace.
Well, isn't that great, man? You know, boy, you know, for a guy that's religious, you are distracted by these pictures, these sex pictures. Why don't you get your wife back home and take her to bed, and the two of you just lock the door for a couple of days? How about that?
That is absolutely uncalled for. What you said there, and...
What, does it sound like too good of an idea?
Hey, I told you, whoever this guy Dickman... And
why don't you just talk to me, okay? You're on here about camping and the world ending, blah, 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 blah. Your wife's split with the kids to go stay with her brother while you calm down and get your head out of your rear end. Why don't you have your... And she's sending you nude pictures. Obviously, she misses you. Obviously, she wants to come home. Obviously, she wants to be with you. Good God, man. What the hell's wrong with you?
There's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with me.
Listen to you bawling like a baby. Your wife is out there sending you naked pictures of herself, you maniac. What do you need, man? You need a telegram? Need a written invitation?
Yeah, man. Listen to me, man. This guy, you ought to get checked, man. Maybe you got brain damage.
Yeah, I think what's happening to you is you're getting dumb, but like that one guy in the movies got dumber.
What guy in the movies got dumber?
That one guy that just died.
Who?
Cliff Robertson.
Cliff Robert? Oh, you mean when he did that Flowers for... Yeah. Yeah.
Who?
Never mind. You ought to call your wife up and tell her to come home, bring the kids home. Everybody have a nice reunion. You and your wife make up and have a nice, sweet time together. And quit with your belly aching and crying about Harold Camping. This old guy, he's going to have predictions till the cows come home about everything, including when the cows come home. Okay?
Well, I think you've misread everything, Mr. Henry. You know, I know all about making love to my wife. Believe you me, you know, I got a handle on that one. And
you got such a good handle on it, man, that your wife's 3,000 miles away with the kids, staying with her brother because she can't be around you because you're a maniac. But meanwhile, she's sending pictures of herself naked to you. But you got a real handle on it, don't you?
Well, what are you trying to say?
What am I trying to say? Dude, you're missing the signpost up ahead, like on the Twilight Zone. Man, you missed it like miles ago. You're missing all of the key signals here. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Vernon in Vernon up in Glendale here on the Phil Henry Show. And don't forget, folks, we are online at philhenryshow.com. We're going to give you information on how to win a free month on philhenryshow.com next hour. Vernon, how you doing?
Phil, I'm doing very good. I wanted to talk to this man. My name is Vernon Dozier, sir. How are you?
Yes, sir.
All right. I'm a high school football coach in Glendale, California. And... I wanted to check in because I think that what I have to say might be of some value to you, sir.
All right.
My job is to motivate people to do the very best they can. My job is to motivate a man and help him reach his goals. In the case of football, of course, my job is to motivate a team full of these young men to reach their goals. I have been sitting here listening on my car radio, and I finally did get home. To you, talking about a wife who's out there someplace, who's got a big, you know, you said she had a big chest.
Yes, sir, she does. Very big.
And you're on the radio here talking about this guy camping. I just took a look at camping. This guy looked like a drowned rat. Okay, you heard what I said, right?
Yes, sir, I did.
Yeah, looked like a drowned rat. And you're on the radio here, sticking up for a drowned rat. While your wife is out there begging, pleading for it, with a big, you know what? Bet she's got a rear end. Bet she got a rear end to match, don't she?
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
Yeah. And all you can do is sit here and cry to your mama about all.
Now hold on, I'm not crying to my mama.
Now you just shut your mouth for a minute, okay?
Mr. Henry,
let's not tell people to shut up.
Hold on. This guy needs, Mr. Henry, let me tell you something. I've been listening to this guy for 45 minutes on your show talking about how people aren't treating Harold Camping right and how, you know, people aren't treating Kristen. He sounds like he needs his daddy. Isn't that right? Don't you need your daddy? Huh?
No, sir, I don't. I want people to understand.
Look, right there. See, you go. You sound to me like the kind of guy that can't get out of bed in the morning unless his mama shows up with a baby bottle. Is that what you need, mister? Huh? You need your mama to help clean you up with a bib, maybe clean up your slop? Is that what you need?
No, sir, I don't need that.
Okay. Then why don't you man the hell up, sack it up, mount up, gear up, or shut up? Because what I've been listening to tonight has got me so, I tell you, Phil, if one of my players started crying and whining the way this guy has tonight, I'd say to him, tell you what, son, get in your daddy's Mercedes-Benz and drive home to your mama and have your mama warm up a baby bottle for you. A baby bottle!
Sir, that's not fair.
And no, you need a this boy, not fair. Mister, you need your mama to get you a baby bottle. A bottle with milk in it. Breast milk, human breast milk. I'll tell you something right now, the way I'm feeling, I could use some of that now.
What did you say?
Nothing. I didn't say anything.
Boy, that sounded pervert.
That sounded pervert. You are the dumbest hillbilly.
All right, sir. I've heard your comments. Thank you. Your motivational speech. Thank you.
Well, but Philly, you're not getting anywhere. This guy wants his mama.
Hey, bud, is that one of your friends?
No.
The hell it wasn't, because that sounded like a crank call to me.
No, that's that guy that call in all the time. You have him on as a gift. His name Vernon Dozier. He's the head coach of football.
Yeah, I know Coach Dozier that we have on, but that guy sounded like some kind of a crank caller of Bud's. That isn't Willie, is it?
No, it ain't Willie. He can't do a Vernon Dozier impression.
If I find out that's Willie...
It ain't Willie. He don't know how to do a Vernon Dozier. Willie don't do a Vernon Dozier one.
Yeah, the hell he doesn't do a Vernon Dozier one. All right, anyway, thanks very much, and we appreciate very much, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much, of course, Mr. Bozell. I didn't mean, per se, to make fun of your religion.
Well, I can tell you, Mr. Henry, I took more than Harold Camping's ever had to take.
I don't think you did. I don't think you did. I think that you, took the normal questions and answers from a talk radio audience. Thank you very much, and have a very pleasant good evening. If I find out your friend Willie...
There wasn't Willie, swear to God.
Because that guy was kooky.
Yeah, but that Vernon Dozier, man, he always kooking out. That cat kooks. Last time you had him on, he kooked. A week before that, he kooked.
And what do you mean he kooked? What is that?
He's always saying something kook.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. Speak English, okay?
Man, you in a bad mood.
Every time I gotta interpret what you two clowns are saying, I get into a bad mood. And then I get some guy, nah. We'll be back, the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Oh, welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, our final hour here, and Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard have joined us, and we're going to do our news and information hour the best way we possibly can. It's been a very bizarre night, having to talk Steve Bozell through what appeared to be a suicidal phase, even though his wife was sending him pictures of herself naked. Your girlfriend ever do that, Bud?
You mean Vivian?
Yeah.
One time she sent me a picture of herself in a new dress.
Yeah, but that's not nude.
Well, yeah.
No, I mean, okay, you don't have to tell me. It's a very private question. I shouldn't have asked you that.
Yeah, she does.
One time she sent you a picture of her in a dress.
That ain't nude, man.
Well, you said she sent a picture of her where she is being... You know, nude and everything.
She ain't nude if she's wearing a dress.
No, but I mean, it had the same effect on me as if she was nude.
Okay, well, you know, don't, What is it with you, man? Is there something that I am saying that is not exactly, you know?
I don't know what you mean.
Ask you if the chair was sending pictures of herself nude.
Yeah, and then he said it was a rude question.
It is a rude question. Forget I asked it, okay? Never mind. God. All right, so anyway, welcome back. It has the same effect on me as if she was nude. All right, well, you know, she sent you a picture of herself in a dress. It's a nice dress, right?
Yeah, it's pretty nice. It's really tight and everything. She's got a nice butt. And
all right, that's enough. God, what am I doing here?
You asked.
You're right. All right, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And anyway, welcome back here to the only news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Believe me when I tell you. We're the only news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Now, the other thing that we want to tell you is that we're online at philhendryshow.com. Watch a live streaming video of our show each and every night, or you can watch it on demand the next day. All you need is a backstage pass. And our backstage passes are available, of course, through our subscription service. However, we are giving away a free month. That's right. Every month, we give away a free month of listening on philhendryshow.com. It's a random drawing that we do toward the end of the month, and here's how to qualify. If you have not already liked our fan page, and I say liked our fan page at the very beginning, because we can't involve everybody that's liked the fan page, but those of you who can like our fan page still, and you have not yet done that, you can go to facebook.com/PhilHendryFans, P-H-A-N-S, like the fan page, and you will be entered in the drawing. Or you can go over to Twitter at twitter.com/PhilHendryShow and hashtag PHS, just hashtag PHS, and you will be entered in our random drawing toward the end of the month for a free month of listening on PhilHendryShow.com. Good luck. And some other really cool things to be announced. By the way, if you've never heard the show on our website, if you want to get a taste of what the podcast sounds like, you don't have to have a subscription to hear the show the next day. You can go over to our five-day archive and listen to our radio show as a stream. So, in other words, you don't get the podcast, you don't get a download, but at least you can click on the stream and listen to the show on demand right there in our five-day archive. And that's one way of checking it out. It is a commercial-free presentation of the preceding night's show. So check that out, too. That gives you an idea as to how the show sounds. And one of the things about listening to our stream is that it is the highest quality audio you're going to find anywhere on the Internet. Everything that we provide for you on our website is first generation. It is the absolute highest quality recording of our show anywhere because we have the first generation recording. So if you're tired of listening to those scratchy, crappy radio station streams,
go on over and listen to our stream.
Yeah.
Go listen to our stream. New Yorkers to Occupy protesters, listen to this. Lay off the drums and stop defecating in the street. That's right. Lay off the drums and stop defecating in the street. This is what they were asking of the people at Occupy New York. And we were last week talking to Margaret Gray, who was there at Zuccotti Park. And she was saying, this is a fantastic, fantastic showing of people, and everybody's getting together, and how groovy this is.
Yeah, they're looking for a hole, to dig a hole for people to squat in.
Exactly. They were already digging holes so people could squat in the holes, you know. And what do we see? Here it is in the news, CBS, a week late, CBS, because we had the story straight from Margaret Gray. She was going over to squat in a hole every half hour when we were talking to her. And she had, what's his name, that Bob Cornwallier holding his jacket so nobody'd look.
Man, that talk about a weird situation.
Weird? I mean, you know, let me tell you about this Occupy Wall Street. And it's the same old thing, man. If you want to recreate the days of Woodstock, I understand. If that's what it's about, just say so. Don't try to give me something about how, yeah, we're fighting for you, the 99%. You ain't fighting for me at all. You ain't done one damn thing for me. Not one. Okay? You cut me in on that trust fund your daddy set up for you. Now you're going to be doing something for me. So go down to Occupy Wall Street and talk to all those people down there and find out which one of them is living on a trust fund that their old man created for them. And you cut me in on that, and I'll be just as happy as hell to sell whatever that crap is you're selling.
What do you mean crap? You're selling a crap?
No, but, you know, You're right. Bad choice of words, considering they're defecating the street. New York residents near a park where Wall Street protesters have been camped out for more than a month are complaining their quality of life has declined. Some neighbors who attended a two-hour meeting Thursday said protesters urinate in the streets and beat drums at night. Some called for the protesters to leave. Our neighbors do not urinate and defecate in the streets, said resident Linda Farstein, CBS News station WCBS-TV in New York, reports. These occupiers need to vacate our neighborhood. In his appearance on WOR Radio on Friday, Mayor Michael Bloomberg said the lack of protest leaders had made it difficult for neighbors to negotiate with him. But protest spokesman Han Shan attended Thursday's meeting and agreed the protesters need to be better neighbors.
That's all, folks.
Anyway, demonstrator spokesman Han Shan, okay.
Well, that guy, he's a Chinaman.
Hey, what did I tell you about Chinaman?
Sorry, he's Chinese.
He's probably American. He's got a Chinese name. He said they need to be better neighbors. Demonstrators also plan on instituting a good neighbor policy. WCBS-TV reports the rules will limit times for drumming and include a zero-tolerance policy for abusive property. But some residents aren't convinced. Can I ask a question at this particular point? Zuccotti Park, did the protesters buy this park? I don't understand. Is it, what is that?
That's where they're protesting.
Yeah, no, I know that's where they're protesting, and it's a really rhetorical question because, you know, there they are camped out on this park, which I think might have been intended for the neighborhood, might have even been intended for children to romp and to play in. I don't know. But these people have decided they're going to take it over and take a dump there and urinate there and throw up there and whatever else they want to do. And they probably think it's cool because it's sort of, it harkens back to their days as when they were freaks and they were wiping themselves with tree bark. Take it easy, bud.
Gesundheit. Thanks.
Anyway, so yeah, that was nice when you were in your 20s and you were back there in your halcyon youth and you were wiping with tree bark, but now you're in your 50s and 60s and it's gross. You understand, Mr. and Mrs. Occupy Wall Street? And you younger versions of them? And you know who you are. It ain't much better. See? So in other words, we're talking about having to live in a neighborhood where you guys are wiping with tree bark or you're just running your ass along the ground like a dog. True. That's how they're wiping there at Zuccotti Park.
Yeah, you go to New York, man, you see a guy dragging his butt on the ground, that guy from Zuccotti Park.
Right. So, you know, enough's enough. When you can't even articulate, and don't give me this stuff about something's happening. You're absolutely right. Something is happening. There's no question that something's happening. There's no question that the American people are waking up to something. And I'll tell you what they're waking up to. They're waking up to, this is nonsense. This is nonsense. We know that where our country seems to be in some financial difficulty. We know from our history what has made our country a profitable and enriched place. We don't see our captains of industry. We don't see those people who hold the wealth. We don't see them doing anything really creative with it. That's a legitimate question, because if you say to me, don't you understand? We cannot raise the taxes on these people. They create the jobs that creates the wealth. All right, you ask me to focus on that class of people as a people who should be protected from taxation because they create the jobs that creates the wealth. And that's a legitimate point. But now what you've done is you've opened the door in the discussion, because now you allow me to say, what are they doing with that wealth that they should be creating the wealth with? You can't say, here's what you get to do. You get to not tax them. Why? Well, I'll answer that question, but no more questions. Okay. You get to not tax them because they can hold on to their capital and reinvest it in the building of business, of industry, in the building of jobs. I see. Are they doing that? You can't ask that question. That's none of your business. And besides, the economy's bad. And besides, the government this. No. Homie, don't play that, man. Don't be giving me that. Don't tell me that I don't get to tax the guy because then he holds on to his wealth and then he's able to, and then in the next breath tell me, well, even if he's holding on to his wealth, the government's doing this and the government's doing that, so we still can't do anything. No. Sooner or later, people do stand up and they say, wait a minute, Charlie, back up with your line of bullcrap or get off the stage. Or find somebody else that can articulate it better, because what you're saying sounds suspiciously like horse dung. You get it? And it's not going to do to call me a socialist or a commie, because I voted for George Bush. I'm a fiscal conservative. I might have voted for Barack Obama, but not for the reasons everybody else. I didn't vote. I'm no progressive. You know, I decided to vote for him. I had my reasons. Let's put it that way. All right. I was paid off, and I'm kidding.
You were?
No, I'm kidding. But facts are facts. It's a good question. So Occupy Wall Street does ask a good question. Here's where they blow it. They haven't done a damn thing toward pushing the philosophy and sort of purifying that philosophy, filtering it, purifying it, and honing it, and then disseminating that philosophy to every American, including everybody who does work on Wall Street, and really boring in with the message. They haven't done a damn thing. All they're doing is beating drums and beating, you know, something else. And,
And crapping in Zuccotti Park.
That's why nobody's got any sympathy for your ass any longer, okay? That's why take a bath, get a job, take off the beads, turn that jungle music down, and stop taking those drugs. All right, we're going to be right back in the world-famous Phil Henry Moore with with more from New York on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL. It's our news and information hour. And don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. Make sure you enter for that free, free month of a BSP.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Gee, I don't know what else there is to talk about. I mean, we beat the hell out of ourselves for 2 hours, beat the crap out of ourselves, beat the living daylights out of my vocal cords are shot. I do more work in this show in 2 hours than any other talk show in the history of the universe does in one. I do more work in 3 hours than any other talk show host in the history of the universe, and that includes anybody you want to talk about does in two. I break my ass more than anybody. But you know what? As my dear father taught me, there will be a day of anointment, man. You know, like redemption is nigh, baby. Maybe Harold Camping is right.
Yeah, maybe you're going to get sucked up to heaven.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'm going to get sucked up to heaven, but there will be a day of reckoning. So help me, there will be a day of reckoning, because I'm telling you, right now, I got no throat left, man. After the beating that I just gave my throat, I said throat, quit snickering, bud, I'll beat the hell out of you. Get out of here. I'm telling you, man, I've got the vocal cords are shot. All I got to do is start, do you think that if I started puking blood, some of the people that are in charge of the actual producing of this show and the distributing of this show and the so-called selling of the show, do you think they'd take notice then? Maybe. I'm speculating. If I went up to their offices there and I said, hi, and I just spit blood up on the floor and I said, see, my vocal cords shot! You think they think that there's a little bit more into doing a radio show than just sitting your ass down and having your engineer load in all the audio actualities of Obama sounding like an ass and how great Herman Cain is and just kind of rolling through that? You think they get the idea there's a little something more to producing a radio show than that? I think maybe they would.
You can't. You got to go up there and spit up blood, man. They'll think that you got like a what do you call it? Yeah, to think you have the rage virus. You got to push their eyeballs in and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
They will, man.
Yeah, that's what they're going to do. TV star and wannabe pole Alec Baldwin took some heat on Wednesday for joining the anti-Wall Street protesters, even though he's a television face at Capital One Bank. Oh!
What's that?
It's a bank, man. It's a Wall Street thing, you know. It's like a bank. It's not a Wall Street thing, but maybe it's traded on Wall Street, but it's a bank. Baldwin visited the Occupy Wall Street encampment at Zuccotti Park late Wednesday night, spending about 2 hours smoking weed and chatting with protesters. According to online videos, he spent much of it being hounded by Ron Paul fans who were annoyed he wouldn't agree the Federal Reserve should be ended. See, this is the thing about Occupy Wall Street. There's Ron Paul fans, there's Alec Baldwin people. Everybody is the same, you know, and they all hate Jews. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you know what, man? It's pretty close.
Well, they all hate Israel. Seriously, the further out on the edge you get, whether you're left or right, you find the same thing. They're all suspicious of Israel. They all got a problem with Israel. They all got a problem with Jews. They all got a problem. I swear to God, it's the most bizarre, and it is symptomatic. It is the last vestige of that destroyed piece of DNA in the human psyche, in the human body politic. It's that little bit of anti-Semitic DNA that hangs around in the human condition that just won't die, man. Just won't die. I mean, you know, thousands of years of the harassment in Europe and being driven from country to country, and which, you know, culminating with the Holocaust, and still we hang on to that. Still, there's a handful, not a lot of them, but a handful of people that still got this problem with Jews. And guess what? They're on the left and they're on the right. They are right-wingers and they're left-wingers. They're progressives and they're conservatives. They're Tea Party and they're Jackball.
What do you mean, Jackball?
It's just gave him a name. You know, there's Tea Party on the right, so I thought I'll call it the Jackball Party on the left. Whatever. So, if the Tea Party on the left, on the right, what would it be on the left?
Well, it have to be something like American Revolution?
Yeah. What was a really cool left-wing thing that we did in the the Benedict Arnold play? No, never mind.
That's bad.
I know it's bad, bud. So anyway, so that's the creepy part. You go to Occupy Wall Street, and you've got these two seemingly different groups of people, but they're all hanging there saying the same thing. Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve. End the Federal Reserve. Let me ask you a question. And answer it honestly. Of the people that want the Federal Reserve ended, how many of them know why it was started in the first place? And don't give me this stuff about how, you know, you had to cram. Yeah, these people down on that Occupy Wall Street, they got to cram, get their lessons in. Oh, wait a minute, okay, Federal Reserve, that was founded. They have no idea what the Federal Reserve was founded. The Federal Reserve was founded for a very simple reason. Very, very simple reason. Wasn't anything nothing weird about it. Nothing extreme about it. The Federal Reserve was one reason and one reason only. The so-called depression or the recession was not invented in the 20th century or the 21st century. The depression and the recession has been happening since the beginning of our country. There was a panic in 1793. 4 years into George Washington's very, very first administration. And that's called a panic because that's what they called it then. It was a recession. There was the panic in 1893. That lasted 7 years. That was a depression. 1857. 1830-something. I think 1838. And on and on and on it goes. We had, and in every instance, banks went out of money. There was no money. The banks lost. The people were making runs on banks. Banks were closing. No money. Unemployment, starvation. Do you understand, folks? We're going through a recession now, and we got all kinds of people whining and crying about it. And I don't know what I'm going to do, and I can't get a job, you know. And in fact, I'm going to whine and cry right now because they're breaking, right?
Yeah, you're talking too much.
All right, well, I'll be right back. Let me just break down and cry. We'll be back with more on recessions, depressions, panics, Wall Street, and depression and panic and recession.
Cry, baby.
Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
Shut up, Mr. Henry.
World famous Phil Henry Show.
Well, the world famous Phil Henry Show, maybe not for much longer. Who knows? 877-876-PHIL, a number here. Now, that's the phone number, but We're going to unplug the phones around here at some point. I ain't kidding you either. Like I said, man, you know, the good Lord gave me a pretty strong voice and a pretty good, you know, level of talent. But if you think I'm going to do night after night after night after night after night after freaking night, breaking my voice in half for this gig, I mean, think again, man. I mean, honest to God, I got a sore throat right now. This used to be a business where people appreciated performance. This is now a business that has been co-opted by hacks and jive-ass mothers with just a political message and a soapbox. Some stupid-ass article I saw in a paper the other day about how an NPR host was, quote, crossing the line into advocacy of Occupy Wall Street. Well, what the hell do you call half of these right-wingers? What are they doing? The guy's got to be reprimanded because he crossed the line into advocating Occupy Wall Street. 99% of the jackasses that are on the radio today are crossing line advocating every right-wing cause there is. Political candidates, anti-Obama this, get rid of the gold, the Federal Reserve that. I mean, these guys are advocating and soapboxing issues inside and out, and they're talking about a guy getting NPR, if it's true, that one should not, quote, advocate a issue if one is to be, you know, a professional comment. And this was a commentator, by the way. Then NPR is the only professional operation there is. All these other companies are bloodsuckers who don't care whether their hosts are advocating an issue or not. All they're doing is they're waiting for the money to start pouring into their lap. I mean, that's what half of these guys do anyway. They don't do any work. They just sit there, wait for the money to drop in their lap. The times are coming, man. You're going to have to start working because radio is done. Wake up. And I've broken my ass for 30 plus years doing this, working in this industry, and the people that run it get dumber and dumber as the seconds tick off the clock. And the reason for that is simply this: all the brain power has fled. They don't want any part of it anymore. It's a sinking ship. We got we were on WWTN in Nashville, Tennessee. Our show got pulled for some hack theatrical manager who decided he wanted to do a conservative talk show. Well, now there is an interesting original thought. That is an original idea. Let's put a conservative host on the air, not just a professional broadcaster. Let's hire a hack who is in theatrical management, who doesn't know the difference between a microphone and an electric toothbrush. Let's put that guy on the air. Because Phil Hendry, he's an entertainer. What is that? What's entertainment? This is radio. Ain't it supposed to be right-wing talk? I guess so, if that's what you guys are bending over for these days. And by you guys, I'm talking about you radio station managers. All you guys, man, that stand there waiting for the money to come pouring through the chute in the ceiling. Breaking my ass morning, noon, and night. And then a radio station up in Washington State, some dump, had the gall on their Twitter feed to start ripping into my show, even as they were kissing the ass of Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity, both of them really good guys, who I happen to know, and it's not their fault. But the program director up there thought it was funny. And I got on the phone with this guy, and I said, the next time you mention my show on your rotten little station, you are going to be kissing my rear end every bit as much as you do Sean Hannity's. How do you feel about that, man? I don't know where this guy got the pair on him or who gave him the green light that it was okay to crap all over us because we work our asses off on this show, trying to create a little bit of goodwill. And we've got a whole industry out there working against us. Against us! Like we don't have options. Like we don't have somewhere else to go and something else to do. We do, man. It's called the World Wide Web now, brother. This is a reality. This is the new beginning. This is the new reality. This is where everybody is. This is where the spike in listening is taking place. Internet radio. Millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of people listening, using it on the weekends, plugging it into their home entertainment systems. You guys don't have any power anymore. You guys are just the radio stations of America, the guys that manage them, the companies, they're like they're ushers at a funeral. And why is that? Because of the way you treat people and the way you treated the product. Because of the way that you guys managed and treated the product. You didn't understand what real entertainment was. All you understood was what is going to give you a short-term blast of cash while you wait to con another bunch of advertisers into buying airtime. It doesn't work like that. Now, if you think I'm afraid of what some people are going to think and they're going to dump my show, what difference does it make, man? We break our ass around here. We try to provide a relevant and satiric and humorous radio program. I mean, we really believe in quality around here. We believe in producing around here. We believe in sound. We believe in all the things that I've always believed radio is. And these are things that they don't get any respect. And then on top of everything else, we're sitting here losing I'm losing my voice. Working the bits that we're working, trying to get an industry to understand. Well, you know, look, man, you know, this is Phil Hendry's really the last chance you got, because the really good broadcasters like Rush, you know, like Sean. I mean, these guys are few and far between. These other hacks that you're hiring, like the theatrical manager, or the ex political pundit, or the ex Watergate break-in thief. Or some other felon, or some other slob, or some stand-up comic that can't make it anymore as a stand-up comic, so he wants to try his hand at doing a radio show, and so you prop his ass up. And when I say prop him up, I do mean prop him up. You pay your way onto radio stations. You sink more dollars into guys that just aren't worth it than I've ever seen before in my life. You're sinking dollar after dollar after dollar. And I'll give you an example. Whoopi Goldberg. Whoopi Goldberg's a great lady. She's not a radio host. You know the money they sunk into her act to try to give her a radio show? What is wrong with you people? Were you born stupid, or did you go to college for it? Or what exactly? The guy that hired her, he's now in television. The guy that hired Whoopi Goldberg to do a morning radio show, he failed his way upstairs to TV. He's probably no better at that than he was at radio. Next stop, the presidency.
Yeah, the network.
Yeah, he'll be the president of ABC. I'll never forget that one, man. Whoopi Goldberg. I mean, there's some things you can see. It's just, that's not going to work. Now, what am I saying? I'm saying, folks, what you guys are up against. It's the same thing. Do we care about professionalism anymore? Do we care about professionalism anymore? Do we care about people that know how to do a job? Or are we just waiting to steal another handful of cash, and then here comes the next fiscal quarter, and see if we can steal another handful of cash, and see if we can steal another handful of cash. And all we do, quarter after quarter after quarter, fiscal quarter after fiscal quarter, is see if we can just steal more money. And I know who you guys are, man. I know you guys, and they write me letters. If you can believe this, some of these losers, these management types, they actually write me letters, and they post on my website, and it's pretty pathetic. Get back to work. Get back to work. And the other, like that comment I made in that interview in Radio Inc. when I said, I don't hate corporate radio at all. Corporate radio works very, very well when it works well. What I don't like are these lazy slobs, you know. And that guy puts up the post there about how Mr. Hendry would like to have people kissing his ass and giving him a limousine ride to work.
Yeah, well, you probably like that, though.
Whether I'd like it, it's got nothing to do with it, man. That isn't what I was talking about. But that's like that. But see, I'm glad that guy commented the way he did, because that was perfect. That's exactly the kind of brain dead jackass I'm talking about. Here I am making a point about something, and this guy completely misses the point and thinks it's because I want to have a limousine ride to work.
What the hell was that?
Some dumbass. I don't know. I forget his name. He was a management type. But I brought it up the other night to illustrate a point. I'm talking, and if you looked at that interview, I was saying there's very specific things that are wrong with the industry. Here is what needs to be done. Here are some of the, I mean, you really got to reinvest in what is it to actually sell a radio show? What is it to promote one? What is it to program one? You got to reinvest in content. That's the one thing that radio has been completely remiss in is investing in content. Well, this guy misses the whole thing.
Well, Mr. Henry sounds like the kind of guy who wants a limousine ride to work.
I thought, well, you know what? That's perfect. That's good. That guy encapsulates. Yeah, that guy is the embodiment, the representation of the what I'm talking about. Just dumb whole baby.
Woo! By the way, you're bleeding from the throat?
I don't know, man, but I'll tell you what, if I start spitting up blood tomorrow morning, I'm telling you, these last 2 hours, I broke a vocal cord. I know I did.
I don't know, man. It sounded pretty good.
Yeah.
No. I was listening to a podcast the other night, and I sounded like that. I'm telling you, there's something wrong with me. I think there's something wrong with me, and I don't think I have much longer to live.
You kidding?
Yes, I'm kidding. All right, so I got that off my chest. This is generally the hour where Phil just goes ape on the radio industry. U.S. rallies, U.S. stocks rally on overseas. I don't care about the stocks rallying, man. Oh, maybe I do because my retirement's tied up in that. Stock surged and registered another weekly gain following a batch of corporate earnings. And, oh, those corporate earnings. You got to love those corporate earnings. And ahead of this weekend's European Union summit on the sovereign debt crisis. On the sovereign debt crisis, U.S. stocks opened sharply higher on the back of strong gains in Europe, as investors hope this weekend's European Union summit will lead to a plan to combat this region's debt crisis. The Dow industrial rally, average rallied 267 points, okay? The blue chip index up. This is up. That's up. Your mom is up. The Standard & Poor index is up. Investors remain fixated on how European leaders will combat the debt crisis that has spread to many regions across the Eurozone. Eurozone finance ministers also approved the latest. Well, the point is, folks, so earnings are up. So what? You know, earnings are up, but this is what we're saying. What kind of earnings are they? What are they making their money on? What are they making their money on?
Well, they must be selling something, right?
No, not necessarily. What are they making? They're making interest on something? Is that it? They're showing a profit because the interest on the interest on the interest? Are they showing a profit because they went ahead and blew up another company and they put a bunch of people out on the street and so the bottom line fattened up the profit? What are they making their money on? That's what this whole Occupy Wall Street's about. Showing a profit, folks, and showing earnings, it don't mean diddly if after, you know, decades and decades and decades and centuries and centuries and centuries, you finally come to the conclusion that earnings don't mean anything, because that doesn't necessarily mean you're manufacturing anything or giving people jobs or, you know, moving the economy along. It just means you made money. How'd you make the money? Firing people? Closing down a business? How'd you make the money? That's the question. That's what Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street's about. I think that's what Occupy Wall Street is about if there's, like, intelligent people running it, which is not necessarily the case. All right. We'll be back here on The Phil Hendry Show, our final segment coming up, and our website, philhendryshow.com.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, and after trying to mollify its critics in recent years by offering better health care benefits of its employees, Walmart is substantially rolling back coverage for part-time workers and significantly raising premiums for many full-time staff, citing rising costs. Walmart, the nation's largest private employer, told its employees this week that all future part-time employees who work less than 24 hours a week on average will no longer qualify for any of the company's health insurance plans. All right. In addition, any new... Do you know... can I give you a background on health insurance? A lot of you guys don't know this. I guess you think it's all commie stuff anyway, but this is not a new concept, health insurance, national health care. A lot of Americans think that it's some commie weird thing. No, it was started originally, believe it or not, by a guy named Bismarck. You know who Bismarck was?
The guy in Germany?
The guy in Germany. Not Hindenburg. Not the Kaiser, not Hitler, Bismarck, as in Sink the Bismarck.
Oh, that's the guy that they named that boat after.
They named the boat after him. Bismarck was the father. He's like the George Washington to the German nation, although our president, George Washington, is the father to a healthy, fairly functional nation. Germany went through all kinds of changes, man, you know, and you know what they are. I mean, they went from having a Kaiser to a freaking dictator to having their country split in half to God knows what else. So anyway, Bismarck, in the 19th century, introduced and effected national health care for the German nation, and they've had it ever since. It's not considered anything strange. It was something that the, at that time, leader of the German nation, Bismarck, felt was necessary, as did Germans everywhere, as did the leaders and the politicians and so forth. So, in other words, they didn't have the discussion that we have, this very uninformed, and don't even worry about it. Don't break a sweat on this one. The discussion that we've had about national health care in this country has been one of the most uninformed and stupid-sounding discussions you're ever going to find anywhere. Just utterly ridiculous. It's had nothing to do with the truth, nothing to do with facts. It's had everything to do with the politicizing and the distortion of different messages. It's got nothing to do whatsoever with what it actually is. And certainly one of the great tragedies of the discussion of healthcare in this country has been, one of the tragedies is that it is such a complex discussion. And that Americans are the, you know, this is the McDonald's nation. So if you can't explain it in 13 seconds to an American, it's just, it doesn't make any sense. Oh, okay, well, unfortunately, you can't explain it in 13 seconds. So I guess we're just going to throw the baby out with the bathwater on that one. Good luck, America. Number two, the real stupidity had to do with the following number. The amount of money that we spend on health care In the United States every year is so enormous, so unbelievably enormous, that talking about tort reform and the rest of it is almost a criminal discussion to have. It's almost criminally negligent of the political leaders of this country to distract us away from the issue by talking about tort reform. $150 billion is garbage, garbage money compared to the amount of money that is out of pocket on health care in this country. But to focus on that anyway, in my opinion, either Boehner and the rest of those bastards are criminally negligent, and I mean that very sincerely. Liars that you should be locked up for it, or they're just dumb. They're just stupid. Because the trillions of dollars that are spent every year on health care in this country dwarf forevermore any tort reform arguing or discussion. Now, either you get it or you don't, and I'm not going to discuss it with anybody because I haven't had a discussion on health care in America with anyone that's had anything to do with any kind of brain power on the part of the people who argue against it. I haven't met a one of them that's got any brain power when it comes to arguing against it. However, we've defeated it to the extent that it's going to be a bastardization of what it should have been. It's been defeated. Now, here's the thing. What it would mean to the economy of this country over the long haul would be very significant. But again, the criminal conversation that has taken place in this country about it, emphasizing the fact that in 10 years, why that, we're never going to, you know, because let's face it, we're all going to be dead someday. So if we don't get the benefits today, then it doesn't make any difference when, you know, we don't want it. That's going to be, that's the real crime, because the money you're going to save... What the hell? Is this the end of the show?
Yeah, can't you read a clock?
Well, if I knew the end of the show was coming up faster, I would have talked about something else, like curling or something. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Well, if you want to know more about healthcare, talk to your doctor.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to talk. I'm going to the doctor tomorrow.
Yeah, you talk to Dr. Ald about that. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Phil Hendry, Dan Northcraft, Chris Johnson, and Fred Scotty. And we're online at philhendryshow.com. Don't forget to enter our contest to win yourself a free month of Phil Hendry Show philhendryshow.com. 1 free month with a BSP by entering over there at Twitter at Phil Hendry Show or on Facebook at Phil Hendry Fans. Until tonight, 7 o'clock for the KFI show in Los Angeles local. This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Night, Mr. Henry.
Good night, everybody.
Phil Hendry.